Daniela Vedel is our guide to Munich and Bavaria right now on Travel with Rick Steves. And Catherine's on the line from Decorah, Iowa at 877-333-RICK. Hey, Catherine, what are your travel plans for southern Germany?
I'm taking my 16-year-old grandson to Munich and Bavaria, and Dachau is one of the places that he would like to visit. And so I have two questions. Is there easy public transportation from Munich out to Dachau and back? And then how can I best prepare him for that experience visiting a concentration camp?
Good question. Daniela, right. You're a parent. You want your teenager to get a respect for what happened in the Holocaust. That takes a little bit of thoughtfulness.
Well, first 16, I don't know what they have been taught at school. Maybe to find out already what he knows so far about. Well, if he says he wants to go there, it's probably interesting to find out why he, with 16, wants to go there. So he must know something about it.
Yeah.
Then, if I'm not wrong, there is a show recently about the Holocaust. But you did, no?
We made a TV show on public television
interesting
about
maybe
fascism.
Yeah,
that would be a very good thing to watch beforehand, Catherine, if you find the Rick Steves show about fascism. And you can stream that on the internet easily.
And then you have plenty of museums also here dedicated to the Holocaust. So probably it would be a good thing.
There's a new docu-center in Munich.
In Munich also, yes.
For the Holocaust. And you would see that before going out to Dachau. Mm-hmm. It's a very good exhibit right in the center
rising.
Of Munich.
What is important, I find personally very important, is to make sure that your son understands the rising of fascism and not just out of the context, Holocaust, and it has happened in Germany. So I think it puts in the context.
So
you can. And then to get to Dachau and back is very easy with public transportation. It takes 45 minutes. So you should dedicate probably a day to this, the whole subject theme, minimum. There are also tours in Dachau that are offered by companies.
It's a parental thing. For a teenager, I can see what Daniela is trying to explain, because as a tour guide, I'm sure she's dealt with it. And some kids can handle it. Other kids, you'd have to be careful about. Dachau is probably a good example of a concentration camp for teenagers more than some other camps.
Mm-hmm.
But you would want to be there with them and help curate what they're looking at, because it's a powerful, powerful experience. And it's a valuable experience. Good for your teenager for having a curiosity about it.
Mm-hmm.
And good for you as a parent to help make that happen. Does that help, Catherine?
Yes, and I've seen the show on fascism, but I don't believe my grandson has seen it. So that's a good suggestion to make sure that he sees that before we go.
Yeah, and Germany is doing a very good job of sharing the lessons from its hard history for travelers these days, much better now than 20 years ago. So as you travel around, there's a lot you can see and do. I would say something fascinating is going to Berchtesgaden, where there's another documentation center where you learn about it, and then you can actually go up into Hitler's eagle's nest. And that's quite a fascinating experience without the graphic heartache of a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your call, Catherine.
Thanks.
Amanda's calling in from Concord in California. Amanda, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Daniela. Thanks for taking my call. My husband and I are planning a trip, and we're planning on bringing our 6-year-old daughter. So I was hoping for some recommendations of places in Munich and around Bavaria that are kid-friendly. Hopefully some places also that are kind of in nature, maybe some short hikes, something with animals that she might enjoy.
Hmm.
All right. So, yes. For example, well, in Munich you have, of course, along the Isar River that runs through Munich. That is beautiful. You can stroll. You can walk down there. You can have a picnic down there. She can play.
It's like a park along the river.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can hike along the river.
Yes, it's wonderful. I don't know if she's riding a bike. In Munich, children with 6 years ride their bikes already. That could be, and there's enough space. Otherwise, there's something nice just outside, just about 5 kilometers outside. Even the tram goes there, the public transport. It's the Bavaria Film Studios, where The Neverending Story was filmed, and where there's still Fuchur, you know, the dog kind of fluffy one. It's there. And there's also, in the forest, there is some wildlife where they have deers and wild boar and all the animals. And they explain about the forest animals in Bavaria. So that's very nice.
What
and that is very close
the
together.
Name of that again?
That is at Strassla. This is the next to the Bavaria Film Studios.
Okay.
So when you go there, that's it's next to it. And there's a tram. Public transport goes there. It takes 20 minutes.
In the big park, the English Garden?
English Garden.
Beautiful place. You can see the people surfing?
Yes, also.
There's a river where there's a constant wave and people are surfing, just like at, you know, in the ocean, but right on a river in Munich, which is a lot of fun for kids to watch. And it's not nature, but it's certainly interesting, the Deutsches Museum.
Exactly, and that's down at the Isar River. So
and
when
it has
you're
a
down
lot
there.
Of kid-oriented yes. things, a wonderful planetarium, and that would be like going to the Smithsonian Institute, but in Germany.
And then, of course, all the... Rodelbahn, all the luge rides that are surround the luge rides to do it. So if you have a car
south, in the foothills of the Alps,
yes, for
that's
example,
a good
plenty,
idea.
Yeah, plenty of those.
Amanda, the ski lifts in the summer, they still run, but they don't take skiers up. They take nature lovers up, and then you go down the slopes, not on skis, but on like go-karts that are in these concrete slalom courses back and forth, and it's really exciting. Mm-hmm. And that's the summer Rodelbahn.
Yeah.
And you'll see people doing that in Bavarian. Kids love it.
Google luge. If you Google the luge, you should find something. And that's so if you have a car, then just going towards the mountains, it's a 30-minute drive. You have all these lakes also where you can swim in. And it's wonderful things.
Nice, Amanda. Have fun with your family.
Thank you so much. It's such a treat. Thanks.
You bet. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking about Bavaria and Munich and Bavarian culture with Daniela Vidal. Daniela, thank you so much. This makes me want to go back to Bavaria.
Thanks for having me.
Danke
wow,
schön.
I'm glad
and
to hear
and
that.
Gute Reise.
Bitte schön. Danke schön. Danke.
Wildlife photographer Marty Essen likes to learn the stories of the birds and animals who live in the places where he camps out. Sometimes it gets him into situations that you can only laugh about after you return home. He joins us now to report on a few of the more memorable encounters he's had in the world's wildest places. Marty, welcome.
Hey, Rick. Good to be on your show.
If I want to travel and appreciate nature, what kind of prerequisites are there? What sort of knowledge should I have before I leave home to appreciate all these great things I might be able to see?
What I did is I picked up every book I could find on wildlife in that particular area, because I wanted to know what I was going to see once I got to that particular area of the world. But it was amazing that no matter how much research I did ahead of time, nature always had a surprise for me that I didn't expect. And that's kind of the fun part.
Once you got there?
Once I got there. You know, a lot of these rainforest regions, whether it's be Costa Rica or especially when I was in Borneo, it's such an under-researched area. They're still discovering hundreds of new species every single year. And so, you know, sometimes you just don't know. Or I was in Borneo, and we see this little snake on the ground, and I'm with a guide from the Desun Sigma tribe who was born in the rainforest, had lived there his entire life, and he was probably about 50 years old. And we come across this snake. And before I touch it, I call him over, and he looks at it, and he says, "Worm snake, harmless." And so I reach down, and I pick up a little snake, and it bites me a couple times in the finger, but it's a small snake, and it can't quite break my skin. And I take a couple pictures of it, and I put it down, and I don't think anything of it till I'm back in Montana, and I'm working on my chapter doing my post-trip research, and matched up the photo with a book, and it turned out to be a venomous banded coral snake that was gnawing on my finger. So sometimes
and it didn't break the skin, so you were lucky.
Didn't break the skin, so I was lucky. But, you know, so even when you're with a guide sometimes, when you're in a remote area, you know, you're both, everybody's learning at the same time.
I was so charmed by the cute little brown, blunt-headed vine snake.
Oh, that was a really cool find. That was in Costa Rica. We were out on a night hike. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'm looking around, and this the daintiest little snake I'd ever seen. It's probably about maybe a foot and a half long, but it was skinnier than a pencil. But the head is like too big for its body. That's how it gets the name blunt-headed snake. So I'm trying to take a picture of it, and I can't quite get my camera to focus where it is. And so I turn to my guide and, you know, ask him, is it venomous? And he says, well, it might be rear-fanged venomous. But being a rear-fanged snake generally means, unless you're in Africa, generally rear-fanged snakes aren't very venomous. It's just mild venom. So I picked the snake up, and he was very docile. I handed my camera to my wife, and Deb took the photo of me. And that's one of the photos I have in my book, Endangered Edens, of me holding this dainty little snake.
And just moderately venomous.
Yeah, just moderately venomous.
Marty Essen is a wildlife photographer and naturalist from Montana.
He often speaks on college campuses about the amazing things the natural world has shown him all around the planet. He's written Endangered Edens to depict what he found in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, the Everglades, Puerto Rico, and Costa Rica. His earlier book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, takes us to all seven continents. Marty's latest title is called Hits, Heathens, and Hippos, Stories from an Agent, Activist, and Adventurer. He's also published science fiction political comedies that tackle serious topics in his Time is Irreverent series. His website is martyessen.com. That's E-S-S-E-N. So you've had some incredible adventures you've written about. One of my favorites was canoeing down the Zambezi River in Zimbabwe. And then you hit what you thought was a rock. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah. We had spent 5 days hiking across Manipools National Park, a 53-mile hike. And as we're hiking, we see these giant Nile crocodiles along the riverbank, and we see all these hippos in the water. And after we finish this hike, we're going to get into canoes, and we're going to head down the Zambezi River on a three-day canoe trip, basically retracing our tracks. And my wife and I, and there were two other couples with us, we were all real nervous about this portion of the trip. And our guide, sensing how nervous we were, he sat us down. He said, "Listen, I've been taking people down the Zambezi River for 16 years. Never once have we had anyone attacked by an animal. Sit back, relax. You'll be surprised how safe and easy this trip is going to be." And so we get into canoes, five canoes in all, and we head down the Zambezi River. And immediately we would come across this barricade of hippos. And the hippos, they're snorting and they're roaring. And I'm wondering, how are we going to get past these hippos?
What's a barricade? Is that like the word for a herd? Or are you talking about a barricade across the river?
There was this line of hippos that were in our way.
Right there, crossing the river.
Yeah, okay. Right across the river. And but as we get closer, the hippos sink underneath the water. And then we canoe right over them with our hearts just pounding.
And your guide is saying, relax?
Relax.
Seriously?
Yeah. And then we come to a part of the river where there aren't any hippos. And one of the rules with canoeing with hippos is you always want to be in deep water. And deep water is right against the riverbank at this point of the river. So we're right against the riverbank. My wife and I are in the second to the last canoe and just enjoying this beautiful sunny day. And all of a sudden we feel this bump. And we're both thinking, well, maybe we hit a rock. Next thing you know, we're 6 feet up in the air. The hippo had come underneath us, bit the canoe dead center in the middle of the canoe. Its lower tusk went right through the bottom of the canoe. Its top jaw came over and snapped the gunwale. And if you can imagine a front-end loader lifting gravel and then dumping it on shore, that's what the hippo did to us. You know, I can still see it in my mind in slow motion as it happens. We go up in the air and I fly out of the canoe first. And then Deb flies out of the canoe and she hits the ground with this eerie thud. And I'm thinking, oh my God, she's dead. And I run up to her, "Deb, are you okay? Are you okay?" And she gets up. And then we remember the hippo and we wheel toward the water and the hippo drops the canoe and then melts back into the river.
You also had a guide who was a little sloppy up in the Arctic on a river trip. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was up in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And, you know, I've been with some of the best guides in the world, I think. But this guide, boy, you know, he just...
You're rafting down this river.
Yeah, we're taking a canoe down the Jago River, and we're going basically from the Brooks Range Mountains out to the Arctic Ocean.
And you called it a braided river. What does that mean?
It's a braided river, and what that means is the river will break off into smaller channels.
And then come back together.
And then come back
together.
So like
braiding, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I think our guide that we had there had been guiding way too many years, and he was basically in for it for himself and not necessarily for his clients. You know, my wife and I are experienced canoers, but we're not great fast canoers. And the whole idea for me when I'm in an area is you go slow and you enjoy. It's not a race. Yeah, there was one scary moment where he gets ahead of us and we find ourselves all alone on this braided river. And if we take the wrong braid, I mean, we're up in the Arctic and there is, you know, no one up there. How are they going to find us as we're going on these braids? It's not like you can see from braid to braid.
So that would be a scary moment when you don't have your guide within sight.
When you don't have your guide
within sight. You've got to go with the flow on the river.
And, you know, and what do you do? I mean, it's not like
what happened?
Well, we happened to take the right braid and caught up with him and basically said, "Don't ever do that again."
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're adventuring through some of the most gorgeous places on the planet with Marty Essen. His book is Endangered Edens and Cool Creatures Hot Planet. Marty, you've got in your books, it seems you love to take photographs of critters. Most of them are not the kind of critters you'd want to cuddle up with in bed. I mean, or on the sofa. These are like, you know, lizards and snakes and creepy things. Is there something that you find attractive for these kind of animals?
Well, you know, it's just, I don't think animals like that necessarily have an advocate. And I try to be an advocate for them. I mean, Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, was kind of the original advocate for creeping, crawling creatures. And, you know, and I do have a lot of bird life and a lot of fuzzy and beautiful creatures in my books as well. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I think a good example is a vampire bat. When we were in Belize in my first book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, we go into this cave that's filled with vampire bats. And they're little guys. They're only about 2 inches long. You know, one of the problems with vampire bats is wherever humans move, they tend to want to kill off all the vampire bats. Well, it turns out that vampire bats have the most effective anticoagulant known to man in their saliva. Scientists have taken this anticoagulant and they've turned it into a life-saving heart drug. And you'll love this name. It's called Draculin. And so Draculin is given to heart patients, people who have had heart attacks or strokes. So here you have a little creature that some people might want to wipe off the face of the planet that is actually saving lives of humans all over the world. There are also venomous snakes that they're using for maybe things like diabetes and things like that. So there's just a lot of different things that can come from these animals.
Marty, I understand that you give a talk around the world in 90 minutes on campuses all over the country, just turning people onto the wonders of nature. Out of all the images you show and the stories you tell, what's the one that you really enjoy that really gets a fun reaction?
Well, I think the most fun one is I'm in Zimbabwe and I catch the biggest snake I've ever caught in my life or ever will catch in my life. I wouldn't dare try anything bigger. It's about a 10.5-foot long rock python. And it takes me several minutes to catch a snake and it's snapping at me.
Now, does that mean you're just like running through the scrub brush grabbing it?
Well, no, he's kind of out in the open on a riverbank.
Okay.
And so he's coiled up in a defensive position and I'm trying to grab it by its neck and it's snapping out at me and I'm kind of doing the Steve Irwin thing, jumping backward with my hands in the air. Eventually I catch it. And, you know, I just hold it for a few moments. And then the picture that gets everybody in the show is the last picture of me giving the snake a great big kiss on the head. And I can see the audience and people covering their eyes when this picture is up on the big screen.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Marty Essen about his book, Endangered Edens. We haven't talked about penguins yet. Let's finish just with a story of one of your encounters with a penguin.
You know, the great thing about going down to Antarctica is the animals do not have a natural fear of people. And so we could get really close to the animals down there, although, you know, there were always rules we couldn't get. We had to stay 15 feet away, but they could approach us as close as they wanted to. So, yeah, we'd have penguins coming up to us, and they would pull on our shoelaces or pull on our pants legs. Then if you walked away, they'd follow you as if you were mom. One of the neat things that we got to watch was a penguin swimming lesson. And who knew penguins needed to learn how to swim? But we're watching these penguin chicks, and they were in this little pond or little pool at the edge of a glacier, and they'd stick their head underneath the water, and they'd hold it for about 10 seconds, and then they would come up, and then they would joyfully run around and announce their accomplishment to the other penguins. It was just adorable. They were so just wonderful to watch, and we were just cracking up.
Marty Essen, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Rick.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Our website is managed by Andrew Wakeling. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.